back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I geek out on the business of sports, whether it's the NFL, Major League Baseball, college athletics, certainly has got a lot going on with it. Our next guest resides in Chicago. He was at the College Football Playoff National Championship game last night in Atlanta. I know this because he was sitting right next to me. I've had him on the show before. We have obviously communicated on social media, but it was nice to sit next to Matt Brown, who writes a newsletter about business and off-field stories in college sports. It's called Extra Points, extrapointsmb.com if you want to see the website. But it was nice to sit there, get some of his thoughts, and chill next to somebody who I'd had on the show before. So I asked him, you want to come on today? He said yes. He is a survivor of the Atlanta airport experience this morning. Tell us what it was like for you. You were like 2 hours after me. Did they get it figured out, or what happened as you tried to get through the airport?
I think everything finally got fixed by around 3, but by the time that I got in, they had set up a couple of emergency like lines through the basement of the airport, or I guess things that aren't typically already used. So I was in there for an hour, and I know this is the kind of thing that everyone else is always super interested in, but like you'll have to realize here, it was like 6 degrees in Atlanta. The schools were closed that day. There was already going to be travel problems, and then you had 77,000 Midwesterners all trying to get back home. So it was a lot in one of the busiest airports in the country.
It is a cautionary tale, and I think about a city like Portland that will host a women's Final Four here in a couple of years, Matt. And like the Notre Dame fans and Ohio State fans who may have had a great experience in Atlanta leave Atlanta going, Atlanta sucks. I heard they were chanting it. They were chanting it because the train broke down. They were chanting it because TSA, you know, one guy who said, Atlanta's broken, Atlanta's broken. And I was like, man, they do everything right. And then there's a long line at TSA and suddenly it's a bad experience that people go home talking about. So you have to be careful doing it. This event will move around like a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of having it in Pasadena. What do you think, Matt? You write, you know, about business and sports, and could they ever have this type of event be in one place, or what's at stake?
I definitely understand the appeal for having it in one place, especially Pasadena. It looks amazing on television. It's a nod to tradition in a direction when the sport is constantly moving away from that. And if that was something that the industry decided to do, I don't think it would be a bad thing. You know, very selfishly for people like you and me, rather than the typical consumer, I don't actually think LA is a great place to have this sort of thing just because it's so dang spread out. The nice thing about having an event in Atlanta, I think New Orleans is like this. I think Indianapolis is like this. I haven't had the pleasure of attending a major event in Portland, and there's plenty of other places I haven't been yet. But for many of those, you have an enormous array of hotel blocks right by the stadium, convention area space, and you can have all of the concerts and the fan programming and the media events, and everybody can walk to everywhere, and you can have a couple of adult beverages if you are so inclined, and not have to worry about spending 45 minutes on the road. And that's a difficult thing to do. I mean, you can't even get UCLA fans to the Rose Bowl because of the traffic. So, yeah, it would make my life a little bit harder, and I would probably complain about it, but I hope that college football doesn't make major decisions to placate people like me. I understand why it would be great for the fans, too.
Give me an idea. It felt, and I've covered, you know, probably back to the BCS era and the playoff area, maybe 10 or 12 of these games, Matt, and it feels like it's trying more and more to be the Super Bowl. Do you get the feel that it's becoming more corporate? The ticket prices are going up, sponsorship deals. You know, what do you see from a business standpoint?
Yeah, I think this is a really good question. And the pricing system for fans, it was not that different from the Super Bowl, I think, for this game, right? The get-in price maybe an hour before the game, I want to say, was north of $3,000. Like, this was not an accessible ticket if you were talking to fans in hotel bars or around the neighborhood beforehand. It's a lot of older fans. And my concern, you know, coming into this was, all right, Notre Dame kind of has the stereotype for being one of the oldest fan bases in the country anyway. This is an expensive ticket. nobody could reasonably be able to travel and follow all of these teams to the playoffs. I felt, though, that there was still pretty high energy in that building, and maybe some of that is just because of the both rabid intensity and also, you know, maybe needing a little bit of therapy for both the Ohio State and Notre Dame fan bases over the past couple of years. But I can definitely see how you can go down this road and end up pricing out the kinds of consumers that make college football games as electric and fun in person as they are. I feel that way about the Final Four. I don't think the Final Four is generally a really great fan experience anyway. You're cramming a ton of people into a venue that's usually not really built for basketball. The sight lines are bad. It swallows up the sound. If they're not careful, the championship game could become like that in the future. But other than a couple of minutes in the third quarter when it looked like Ohio State was going to walk away with this thing before they immediately stopped, I felt like the energy was still pretty good in the building.
We're talking to Matt Brown. Extra Points is the newsletter. Covers business and off-field stories in college football. You know, Ohio State held up a flag. A couple players held up this flag. It said Ohio against the world, during the celebration. I thought it was really interesting. But you have a different take. A lot of people saying, hey, they bought a championship. They outspent everybody. Look at their payroll. You're saying not so fast.
Yeah, I think the narrative around this is a little bit more complicated. I'm trying to finish writing this out, you know, later this week. Here's what we know, because getting hard and fast data about NIL is really challenging. We know that Ryan Day and Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjork have essentially confirmed that the total payroll number was around $20 million. Ross told me on the field yesterday. Day mentioned it in his press conference. Ross also told me that, hey, that's not the biggest number in the country. And while it's difficult to get hard and fast numbers, I'm inclined to believe him. I think there's probably about five schools that are in that conversation. But when you hear fans, I think, talk about a school buying a team, it implies a different kind of roster construction. The overwhelming majority of Ohio State starters on both sides of the ball, and even key reserves that played significant snaps, the overwhelming majority of them were Ohio State high school recruits. I think of all the offensive and defensive linemen that played yesterday, I think all of them were Ohio State high school recruits. They brought in a quarterback from the transfer portal. A lot of other schools did. Will Howard was certainly in demand, but, you know, the guy was a 3.5 star out of Pennsylvania, and he got benched for Adrian Martinez at Kansas State. I think that's a little bit different than going and getting a Caleb Williams. You did get Caleb Downs, who's one of the best safeties in the country, was a super recruit. You did get some running back help, but almost all of the skill position players, your lines, came from high school. Where Ohio State spent a lot of money this year was on guys who had already been in the program for 3 years and were contemplating going and being a third-round NFL draft pick. And I think it was a combination of donor cash, corporate cash, which Ohio State is in a position more than, you know, almost anybody in the country. I put Oregon and Texas in that conversation too, but not many other schools. A lot of corporate money, and then culture. And this was something that they mentioned, that Bjork mentioned, that other players mentioned, that they were personal friends, that they felt like they had unfinished business, didn't reach their other their previous expectations, and liked being around this program. You can look at several other schools in the country this year that spent a lot of money. Florida State, you know, being at the top of that list, but we could say this about Miami or about Ole Miss or about plenty of other teams that didn't get close to this area. And I think it's important, in my view, to understand that, you know, not all $16 to $17 million payrolls are created equally in terms of how they're spent and how that's raised. And I don't think the sport, for football particularly, is in a place where you can buy a team if you haven't done some of the other supporting infrastructure stuff first.
Matt Brown, Extra Points, is with us. Last night at the game, you mentioned the get-in price right before kickoff swelled to over $3,000, approached $4,000. I talked to a guy early in the week who bought a ticket for $1,800 in the upper deck. He was a little nervous. I saw him the next day. He said, hey, that same ticket's $1,000 more 24 hours later. Tickets were going crazy. Yet hot dogs at Mercedes-Benz Stadium were $2. I love that. Arthur Blank does that with the Falcons. He does it with his MLS team. Why don't more stadiums, Matt, do fans a square and just give them a $2 hot dog like Costco?
I completely agree. I know one of the very first stories I ever wrote for Extra Points, you know, way back in like 2020, was talking with some folks down at Lafayette, you know, the Raging Cajuns. And they said, hey, for our football team, we want a Raging Cajuns game to be the most affordable place to eat dinner in all of Lafayette. We're going to do $2 hot dogs. We're going to do $3 tall boys or whatever the state minimum is for Louisiana and make it as and make it as affordable as possible. I think I say this with love. There is a drinking culture in South Louisiana that makes that a little bit easier than other places. Those are professional drinkers. Those are not amateurs. You can sell booze pretty cheap. And the rationale was it's more important for our program to have a full stadium and have people have a positive experience than it is for us to nickel and dime people on concessions. Now, to be fair, right, if you walk around Mercedes-Benz, there's plenty of concession options that are $22. You can go to the self-service cocktail machines where they take a selfie of your face to make sure you're 21 and pour out a drink for you. If you want the more high-tech premium experience, that's not $4, right? But when you're the Falcons and you have the television revenue streams and you have the licensing revenue streams, these other things, you don't have to nickel and dime people. And I think what we're seeing in college, I'm not sure what the experience is like in Oregon or maybe some of the other places in your market, but you have two other factors that make this hard. And one is that a lot of ADs may be great moral people and really know college athletics, but they're not necessarily business folks. And they don't, they're not trying to collect the same data. They're not responding to the same incentives. They're not as connected to professional sports. They're just doing things because that's the way they've always been done. And you have more complicated, onerous contracts with Aramark or with third-party facility managers. And you might have school leaders that are like, man, it's just not worth me taking a week going through all this red tape to figure out how I can sell a $3 hot dog. It's just easier to stick with whatever paperwork I've already been doing. But I'm with you. If I was a school right now in an era, especially in a market where there's so many other entertainment options, which is the case all up and down the West Coast, you got to think, I need to lower my margins on parking, lower them on beer, lower them on hot dogs, get people into the building and trust that I can give them a great experience to make them fall in love with the place without having to worry about spending $400 to take a family of four out.
It's so restrictive for families. You're right. And that Blazers organization better be listening to this. You went down to the college football NCAA NCAA convention. And did EA Sports come up there? Like, on your timeline, people want to, I guess people always ask you, are you designing the video game? Are you just reporting about the video game? Are you just fielding complaints about the video game? How did college football 2025 go or whatever it was called?
Yeah, no, if there was anybody from EA Sports at the NCAA convention, I didn't see them there. There's a couple of people from some of the major licensing companies, but if you ever have the misfortune of hanging out in my Twitter mentions, I think it's a reminder that I should continue to spend less time on that place. There's no matter what I'm talking about, someone's going to ask about the video game. And I think that's because I was the guy that broke the story when the game was going to come out last year. Yeah. I broke the story of some of the school feature requests just from sending a gajillion open records. And I know people at the company. If I was designing a game, guys, I wouldn't be showing my news all the time. I'd be in a different business. I'm just the person who's trying to report on it. There'll be another one that will come out probably next July. It's a four-year deal for all of the schools. It was an overwhelming commercial success this year. Smash what EA was projecting. Absolutely smash what schools thought that they were going to be earning from licensing. So the Oregons and Oregon States of the world got a much larger check from CLC than they were expecting, you know, several hundred thousand dollars more than was originally projected, you know, last January. And I think an interesting industry question here is whether the commercial success of this first video game will inspire other development companies to either potentially make basketball games or to potentially make other kinds of football games, potentially for mobile devices or for PCs or kind of down market, which would generate more licensing revenue for the schools and for the athletes and, you know, give consumers more things to play.
The video game world, is there competition? It just feels like there's so much upside there. Or does EA sort of have its niche carved out? And the brand and the customer loyalty, you know, and they're just in a lane like no other.
It's a good question, John. And the way that it's set up right now, and it's the same way for Madden and for other major sports titles, is that the EA secures an exclusive license to a specific kind of game. The paperwork calls it like a simulation quality game, meaning that nobody else can make a game similar to EA College Football or to Madden and secure the rights for Oregon football or the Dallas Cowboys or something else. But that doesn't mean there can't be other kinds of games. There are arcade games. There are roster simulation games like Football Manager or Out of the Park Baseball. One of the challenges, though, and it's really a challenge all over the entertainment industry, is that it's become exorbitantly expensive to make what we call a AAA game. Physics and 3D animation and software development costs have skyrocketed. And so a lot of companies think, it's not really worth it for me to make a game to try to compete in the same niche if it's just as expensive for me to make this or a shooter or something else. Just like if it costs as much money to make an indie romantic comedy as it does a comic book movie, you got to make the comic book movie because that's more likely to be a mass market seller. What I think the interesting industry question is, and this is something I'm reporting on and you know making phone calls about, are whether some much smaller companies might decide, I don't want to compete against Madden head-to-head, but maybe I can make a much cheaper, much simpler game that's very different and can still acquire some of those licenses. And I think the college space is more ripe for that kind of innovation than the NBA or the NFL.
I'm going to leave you with this, and I think it's a great topic, but this system that we're watching in college football with NIL and the portal and the NCAA saying, hey, you don't really need to get in the portal, and here comes revenue sharing, but not everybody will share. And then these NIL companies, a lot of them are going to stay separate from revenue sharing. It's going to be like a bonus situation. It just doesn't feel sustainable, Matt. What do you think happens? Do athletes organize? Does the market correct? What do you expect to see in the next 18 months or so?
I don't really think there's going to be a major market correction. And I understand why that would be a reasonable thing to assume, especially because over the last year, a lot of athletes, particularly men's basketball players, have earned six figures and just not done anything on the court or on the field or taken the money and then immediately transferred somewhere else. And you would think, hey, we're not getting a return on this investment. There's going to be downward pressure. I think you look to European soccer, where every year you have people that work in that industry saying, guys, there's no way these clubs can make money. The salaries are just exploding. And what ends up happening is, all right, then they just sell those clubs to a richer guy. And now, like, you look at the EPL and it's just sovereign wealth funds, American bajillionaires or Russian oligarchs. And that's just because it's more fun to spend money and hope to win than it is to make a profit. I think that same mentality kind of happens here in college sports too. And so that means, hey, maybe the car dealership money gets out of the business and that gives into oil money or gives into SaaS money or big tech money or Larry Ellison's girlfriend throwing a gajillion dollars at Bryce Underwood kind of thing. There's always going to be a richer guy. For people that want stability or structure or predictability, as unpopular and frustrating as that is, I think the only way college sports gets there is through the courts and to some extent through lawmakers. And that was much easier to predict 2 weeks ago than it is now, knowing who the president is, who's going to be leading DOJ and the Department of Education, and the caliber of lawmaker that will be running some of these subcommittees. So next 18 months, I'd bet on more confusion, chaos, and unpredictability than less. And we'll just our industry's collective hands are in with Ted Cruz and Clarence Thomas, and so we'll just have to see where that goes.
Matt Brown, extra points, read him there. Matt, thank you, man. It was a joy to sit by you during the game, and glad you're home.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Glad you're home too. Pour yourself a Celsius. I don't know about you. I'm exhausted. I think there'll be a nap in my future tomorrow as I try to recalibrate after a week on the road.
Did you sleep after the game? Because I want to say you were still there when I left, and I went down to the field, and then I saw you posted from the field not long after. And by the way, that walk to the shuttle was icy. It was cold. but what time did you go to bed?
I think I went to bed close to 3. I left Mercedes-Benz around 2:15. I went to the press conferences. I tried to file from there. you know, had a little bit of adrenaline. I think slept until about 8. And you know, I got back here, and I've got two little girls who want to spend time with me at home. Yeah. I want to be an engaged dad. Tomorrow's going to be sleepy time. So here's hoping nobody breaks any crazy news or calls me to ask for any difficult cognitive questions.
Yeah, I love that. And same thing, Matt. Thank you. When I got home, kids got home from school just before the show, and my fifth grader, she had messaged me, "Are you home yet?" And I was deplaning at PDX, and I said, "Yeah, I'm home." And she came in and she just said, "Are you okay?" I find that interesting, and I want to ask her about that later. She worried about me being at an event. She said, "Are you okay?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm okay. I just didn't sleep very much." And oh, by the way, I feel energized. I'm not ready for a nap. I'm ready for hour three coming up top of the hour, starting with the 5 at 5 and another guest. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. We're going to talk about our market and major sporting events.